Word, I'm gonna say the word.
In the beginning was the word.
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 Was the word.
From the studios of KJZZ in Phoenix, Arizona, welcome to Word, a podcast about literature. Here's your host, Tom Maxedon.
Coming up on this episode of Word, the 2022 shooting of a Valley man by a former Phoenix police officer is the inspiration for a recent collection of poems.
My ex-husband calls to tell me our son has been shot by police. And my ex-husband mews like he is crying around his words, Adam is dead.
Plus, we'll talk with the author of a new book of climate fiction short stories.
I'm really kind of doing a different thing with my stories. Rather than trying to get up on the soapbox and, you know, warn people and beat the drum that something needs to be done, I'm trying to not provide answers for people. I'm trying to raise questions.
But first, a lighter slice of life. Romance. Well, sometimes that is. The Sunrise Mountain Library in Peoria just started a new Romantics book club, which meets monthly. Librarian Kathy Jackson is its co-creator, and recently we spent a few minutes catching up to talk about the group.
I'm the senior librarian. What does that mean? I oversee all the librarians here at Sunrise Mountain, and I'm also the adult fiction selector. In layman's lingo, that means I buy all the adult fiction for the Peoria Public Library system. So we noticed an increase in the popularity of once called chick lit is now maybe being called contemporary romance, or we decided to spin it and be new romantic.
I just did a cursory search, and I'm not surprised that romance was high on the list. Now, of course, this could be broken out into subgenres, yeah. For instance. There's some that tend towards more of the fantastic, believe it or not, crime romance. The genre has exploded in numerous ways.
Yeah, and just to give it some perspective, the number one book on the New York Times bestseller list this week is called Funny Story by Emily Henry, who's one of the most popular contemporary romance writers. And so we're seeing a real explosion in that dynamic. So people like, and I'll just throw out some authors, Emily Henry, of course, Abby Jimenez, her book is on number 9 on the New York Times bestseller list, and Christina Lauren, Tessa Bailey, Elsie Silver, Colleen Hoover. If you haven't heard of Colleen Hoover, she is a TikTok phenomenon. So that's what we started seeing in the library. So we said, let's start a book club exclusively for patrons interested in contemporary romance, we're calling it. So that's where the new romantic book club came in, and we're just getting it off the ground.
Kathy, do you have a sense of the age group? Are you getting requests for romance from, I don't know,
yeah,
teens?
You know what? Yes, I was just going to say that. So lately, in fact, just last week, there was a young lady in here. She was about 16, and she was asking, well, I want something a little more spicy. Don't get me wrong, they're not way over the edge, but they do have romance and what comes along with romance. So yeah, I think it runs the gamut for ages. There are some teenagers who are showing an interest, and then there are middle-aged women and even older ladies.
And what about for the men in the audience? Are they welcome?
Oh, cool. We don't discriminate here, but maybe when they listen to this, they'll want to come over because we're equal opportunity here. So yeah, we'd love to have some gentlemen join us. Great suggestion.
This is set up to be a monthly event, which, you know, has kicked off. And how much space do you have for folks? What are you looking for in terms of turnout?
We have two meeting rooms here. One of them can accommodate like 50 people. So we haven't had those numbers yet, but hey, who knows, that could happen. So we have plenty of room. We're looking at, you know, providing some refreshments. And I even thought down the line, maybe we could have a food theme that went with our books. So again, we're just getting started. So this is fantastic to get the word out. We're up in North Peoria, but anybody in the area is welcome to join us.
For pure enjoyment, I think folks like to get together and talk about things, but it's also a community builder, and it's also just a way for people to catch up with their neighbors and the rest of their community and check in on their well-being.
Yeah, it's a socialization thing for sure as well. So talk about books, chit-chat about other things. It's pretty open.
Kathy, I want to thank you so much for coming to Word and talking to us about the new Romantics Book Club. We really appreciate your time.
Everybody come on over and join us. We're a lot of fun.
You can find out a bit more about the New Romantics Book Club on our website, word.kjzz.org. Coming up, From Romance to Heartbreak, as the 2022 shooting of a Valley man by a former Phoenix police officer inspires a collection of poems. I'm Tom Maxidon, and you're listening to Word, a KJZZ podcast about literature.
With everything from groceries to orthodontics available on demand, yes, really, why not public radio? Make playing KJZZ part of your smart speaker routine to stay informed on your schedule.
It's time to plan your summer road trip. If you have a vehicle that won't be a part of your trip to San Diego or Yellowstone, donate it to KJZZ. Find out more at cars.kjzz.org. And thanks.
Hey, I'm A. Martinez from Morning Edition.
And I'm Phil Latzman from Morning Edition on KJZZ.
We start our days early, really early, so you have the news you need to start your day.
Later, we take over. I'm Juana Summers from All Things Considered.
And I'm Tiara Vian from All Things Considered on 91.5.
Ease into your evening with us with updates on the biggest stories of the day
and the latest in music, arts, and science.
Listen to KJZZ 91.5 every weekday.
Welcome back to Word. I'm Tom Maxidon. In early 2022, I interviewed Susan Vespoli for her then collection of poems titled Blame It on the Serpent. Shortly thereafter, her son, Adam Vespoli, was shot and killed by a former Phoenix police officer. That loss inspired a 2023 collection of poems titled One of Them Was Mine. Because a wrongful death lawsuit was filed against the city of Phoenix, we were not able to discuss the publication until now, after the suit has been settled in her favor. At the outset of our recent convo, Susan recapped in detail the case involving her son.
It came about because shortly after the January interview, it was actually March 12th, 2022, my son was shot by a Phoenix police officer, Donnell Lindo, which kind of blew everything apart. I use poetry to understand things and heal. So I felt like in the face of powerlessness, I just wrote every single day. As soon as my son died, I just began to write and write and write and write. And it came to be where I wanted to get his story out. I wanted, there was the side of the story that came out publicly, released by the police. Then there was me to be his voice and to be a voice for others who have suffered a similar fate.
Can you recap briefly what happened during that altercation? Because I understand there has been a financial settlement with the city of Phoenix. Is that correct? Or either the Phoenix Police Department?
That is correct. Yeah, city of Phoenix. It was, both the city of Phoenix and the police department. So it came together because, that's all under the same umbrella. So what happened with my son was, my son had struggled with addiction, and occasionally he would be on the street homeless. Since the first book was written, which was all about addiction, and even in that book, there was a part about he found religion and he began to work in a food bank at a church and really found his way that way. And then he was trying to help people on the street, that had been hopeless like him. He was trying to tell them what they could do, to save themselves. So at one point he was on the street. That was the night before he was killed. And so the police came March 11th, and I have the body cam of this, so I have seen it. They woke him up at 6 a.m. to cite them for sleeping in a public place. And my son, he was saying, "Why are you arresting us? We didn't do anything wrong." And for that, he got thrown to the ground. And now you're going to be arrested and it's a felony. And, they arrested him, took him into jail, and they released him. And the next morning at 4:30 in the morning when they released him, it was cold. And he called me and he also called his father, but my phone's not on at 4:30 in the morning, so I didn't get the call. He was freezing. He said he'd been beaten up twice. He needed help. And so he got on a bus, which he always would do. That was one of his things when he was on the street at times. He thought he could get on the bus for, temperature control in the summer or, it was
yeah,
cold.
And that's not uncommon.
Right. So then they ordered him off the bus and he and there was one other person, they were sleeping. And so then they called the police. They called the man who shot him and he got on the bus, told them to get off. My son walked off the bus and my son, I don't know what he was thinking, but he did walk over and get into the police car, which was unlocked and running. I don't know why he did that. So then he was shot. Donnell Lindo, somehow his body camera disappeared, quote unquote, but it was captured by bus camera. So things that he said were not true because it was captured on the bus camera, what he did. He just walked right over there and shot him in the back of the head. So that's what happened.
Our thoughts and hearts definitely go out to you and your family. And we should say his name, Adam Vespoli.
Adam. Yes, thank you. The policeman's no longer a policeman.
So he was removed from the force or did he resign? Do you know?
He did resign because he was put before one of the disciplinary review boards and he was found their terms were out of policy and he immediately resigned because then it was going to be referred to this next step, which could have led to his removal. Although it was very hard to get any information out of the police records, even though it's your public right to a lot of stuff. But I that's how, you know, I found that because I went to the police records over and over and over and over until somebody finally gave me that piece of information that had that.
Let's talk directly about the book. One of them was mine, a collection of poems. There's some heartbreaking descriptions on the back. One of them by a poet laureate of Belfast, Maine, who wrote, "The poems feel as if they were forged in a fist's crucible molten and brutally seared through the hot slosh of pain." Were these collections of poems before his death and after? And how long did it take you to compile this book?
There was a couple that I wrote before that I included in there, just because they captured him, like the food bank one, you know, that part, or my son no longer missing. So there was like three poems that had been written before. I'm trying to remember the exact date. It was about a year. It took me like 1 year to get the poems all together submitted. He was killed March 12th and the book was released the following year, July 4th. So that's how short it was. Like I was like on a mission just to get, cause I wanted his voice out there. I wanted people to know what happened. And then ironically, because of the lawsuit, I was told I couldn't read any of them and I had to like stop it until the lawsuit was resolved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember you reaching out and that was one of my first concerns just, you know, as a journalist was maintaining some objectivity. But now that things have been quote unquote settled, which may be the worst word in the world to use, but that's why I felt like, you know, I wanted you to come back and tell your story and the aftermath of it. Well, I wanted to offer you some space. If you have a short poem from the collection that you'd like to read.
Sure. Let me see. I guess I can just read a tough one, but it was from the beginning, which is called "My Ex-Husband Calls to Tell Me Our Son Has Been Shot." I can read that one.
Okay.
Okay. And I will also say that some of the poems in here are found poems that I used my son's couple of years of text messages, and I put them together to make four unrhymed sonnets to give his voice to, so you could, people could understand who he was, not just the stereotypical addict. So here's the poem. "My ex-husband calls to tell me our son has been shot by police. I answer my phone after worrying all day about my son, finding his 4:27 a.m. voicemail. I'm freezing. Two people beat me up. Please help. And my ex-husband mews like he is crying around his words. Adam is dead. And I wail like an animal in labor. No, no, no. Into the air above my six-year-old granddaughter, who is crouched behind the leather arm of a sofa. I hang up and pull her close to me, say over and over, it's okay, it's okay. Squeeze her so tight that she will later tell people I hurt her. I go outside to make calls so she won't hear me, but her face appears as my words, the police shot him, leave my mouth, and her eyes are wide as I point to the door, go back inside. And John will show me headlines on his phone, say it's on the news. And I will call my sister and I will call my friend from parents of addicted loved ones who I had called earlier when I couldn't reach Adam, when I was worried sick about him again, when I had said to her, this must be even worse than death, this cycle of worry. But I was so, so, so wrong about that."
Thank you so much for that reading, Susan, and I appreciate your time. Susan Vespoli is the author of One of Them Was Mine, a collection of poems. And I appreciate you coming back to Word, Susan.
Thanks so much, Tom.
You can find out a bit more about Susan Vespoli and her latest collection of poems titled One of Them Was Mine on our website, word.kjzz.org. Coming up, a new collection of climate fiction short stories from a former University of Oregon science writer. I'm Tom Maxidon, and you're listening to Word, a KJZZ podcast about literature.
Need a break from the news? Need some inspiration while you work? You need some jazz. Listen to the new Jazz PHX at jazzphx.org. It's your home for jazz in Phoenix with our local hosts and the best new and classic artists. Give it a listen at jazzphx.org.
Did you know 2 out of every 3 NPR listeners prefer to purchase products and services from public radio sponsors? You can see the benefits of becoming a KJZZ corporate sponsor at sponsor.kjzz.org.
I'm Jay Ellison, producer of The Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us for our show here on KJZZ. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth shows are renowned for the range of human experience they reveal. Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you. The Moth Radio Hour airs Saturday at 3 on KJZZ.
Welcome back to Word. I'm Tom Maxidon. The Fragile Blue Dot, Stories from Our Imperiled Biosphere, is a new collection of short fiction by Ross West. When we spoke recently, he began talking about his former roles at the University of Oregon, which partly inspired this group of short stories.
I was the science writer for the University of Oregon and the editor of the university's research magazine for 10 years. And that gave me a lot of exposure to science, which I loved. And it also led to me being the text editor on the Atlas of Oregon and then 2 editions of the Atlas of Yellowstone. And again, that gave me a lot of experience with science, and especially at a time when global warming was becoming more and more on people's minds.
What would you say is the best description to adequately talk about what we are currently experiencing, and if we don't change, what's going to happen? Is global climate change fair terminology?
To my understanding, and I'm not a climate scientist, but I have read quite a bit about it. Yes, global climate change would be a good way of looking at it. It's unpredictable in any specific microclimate how it's going to manifest, but you know, all signs point to things changing.
And we need to distinguish the difference between climate and weather, right?
That's a key one. That's a stumbling block for people because, you know, weather is, as we all know, weather is about as unpredictable as can be. Whereas climate, you're looking over data sets that are, you know, far longer. And, you know, the trend lines are much clearer. You know, whether, you know, today or tomorrow could be, you know, 10 or 20 degrees warmer or cooler, depending on which way the wind blows. But, you know, a trend over 10, 20, 100 years. Those are more telling and meaningful.
You have a new collection of short stories, fictional, The Fragile Blue Dot, Stories from Our Imperiled Biosphere is the title of it. I was curious why you wanted to use that approach, you know, as opposed to maybe writing a novel, for instance.
I've written a few novels, and one downside of novels is they take a long time to write, in my experience. And short stories have a quicker turnaround time and, you know, and a quicker response time from publishers, which is always nice to get, you know, when your story gets accepted somewhere. That's kind of a nice feeling. Why I chose that as the way of addressing climate change is that, you know, I've read quite a few cli-fi books, as they're known. In a novel, you know, you take on a set of characters and maybe a topic and you explore it and explore it and explore it. My interest is more that we're all living in this age when the media is coming at us with these dire warnings about what's going on and how cataclysmic this could be. We're sort of running a psych experiment on ourselves that's never been run before, in the sense of what happens when you tell people that there's an existential threat looming closer and closer and closer, unlike anyone that we've ever faced before.
Wow, what a beautiful description of that. I've never heard it described that way. And you kind of anticipated my next question, which is, of course, much of climate fiction, or cli-fi, as you say, is dystopic by its very nature. After all, we know sort of where we're headed if we don't get greenhouse emissions under control, for instance. How do you balance this fact with maybe some hope in your stories, or do you?
I'm really glad that you added the "or do you" on the end, because I'm really kind of doing a different thing with my stories. Rather than trying to get up on the soapbox and, you know, warn people and, you know, beat the drum that, you know, something needs to be done, that's not what my intention is at all. My intention is that, you know, this is the era that we live in, and, you know, likely are going to be living in for quite a while, this era of, you know, heightened sense of global warming, global climate change, potential gloom and doom, potential dystopian futures. I came out of a kind of a funny mix of liberal arts and science. My interest is literary, in the sense of using literature to explore how people deal with the situations in which they find themselves. And the situation that we are finding ourselves in, and like I said, likely will for quite a while, is one where we're on a perilous journey towards, you know, potentially devastating and cataclysmic climate change. What does that mean for the guy who gets laid off from the coal-fired power plant? What does that mean to the parents whose little girl decides that she wants to become the American Greta? You know, those are very real sort of situations, and that's what we're dealing with. And I'm trying to not provide answers for people. I'm trying to raise questions. Well, gee, what if, and what about, and how would that person feel? How would I feel if I was in that situation? Sure. And maybe that situation is coming my way. What am I going to do when it gets here? That was more the territory that I was trying to cover.
And of course, you're talking about Greta Thunberg. You mentioned your background as an academic, and I'm wondering about the writing process that might be different in fiction, but also what things are similar. Of course, deadlines might be one thing that might be a similarity. What are some others, and then some differences, briefly?
The fiction stories they're certainly not a deadline. In writing about something which is, you know, say in a science story, to write about green chemistry, or, you know, something like that, which I've written about plenty. Those kind of things, you know, you're just telling a story about what's actually going on out there, what researchers are doing, what are the potential applications. You know, it's a very straightforward thing. Fiction is sort of a mysterious thing. You know, people talk about the muse. Sometimes I find a story that I get excited about, and other times I sort of stare at the page and think, I hope I have another idea someday. You know, there's a lot more craft, I believe, that goes into my fiction writing than into a nonfiction piece, because by its very nature, literary writing is sort of a different creature, and there's higher expectations for it. And, or I certainly, as a writer, have higher expectations for what I produce.
Also, I would think language choice in some cases, because I'm curious about the audience and the age that you're writing for in this book of short stories.
Exactly. Suiting the level of the language to the story, particularly to the characters in the story. Some of the characters in the story are children, you know, and children have different sort of ways of expressing their thoughts. For example, I have one of the characters in this, one of the stories was the guy who was charged by the United Nations to come up with the comprehensive United Nations response to global climate change. You know, he's a guy who's got a lot of credentials behind him and a great deal of expertise behind him. So that required a much more elevated sort of writing. So suiting the level of the writing to the character involved, and, you know, and if they're happy or frightened or in love or whatever it happens to be, that all of those things inflect the way we choose our language. And then I try to reflect that as the writer.
Ross West is author of The Fragile Blue Dot, Stories from Our Imperiled Biosphere. It's a collection of short stories. Ross, thank you so much for coming to Word. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
You can find out a bit more about The Fragile Blue Dot, Stories from Our Imperiled Biosphere by Ross West. Just go to our website, word.kjzz.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you, who make monthly contributions as sustaining members of KJZZ. If you haven't made your gift of support yet, or simply can't remember the last time you did, that's okay. There's a link on our website for how to do so. Please consider a gift of $5, $10, or maybe even $30 per month to help fund the fact-based journalism, in-depth conversation about the news, and programs like Word. I'm Tom Maxidon.
and we're back later this month with another series of Literary Convos. Thanks so much for listening and for supporting Public Radio.
Word.
Word?
Word.
Was the word.
Thanks for listening to Word, a KJZZ podcast about literature. You can find all episodes online at word.kjzz.org or wherever you get your podcasts.